On this week's episode, the Rascals mince about the most Trumpian thing Trump has done, if Paul Ryan will endorse the Donald, and a forward motion in the Illinois budget impasse.
Today is Friday the 13th. That's May 13th, 2016. We are the Mincing Rascals. I'm John Williams. You can hear me Saturday afternoons on WGN Radio from 1 to 3.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
And I'm Kristen McQuarrie, a member of the editorial board and a columnist twice a month.
I'm Eric Zorn. I'm a columnist for the Tribune. You can read my vital must-read column on Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
It's no fair. He put adjectives in.
I know. I didn't know we were supposed to editorialize when we were introducing ourselves like that. Who was that? A fake spokesperson for Eric Zorn?
That wasn't me. That was my spokesman.
John Miller.
Okay, so Bertrand, tell us this story.
Okay, so apparently People magazine called, was it Ivanka, or he divorced, he was getting a divorce.
It's hard to keep straight.
In the 90s, right. Yes. And he was dating Marla Maples or something. I don't know what it was. But yeah. People magazine calls Trump's office, say, we want to comment, we're doing a story. And they say, well, Mr. Trump's not available. And a few minutes later, this guy calls the reporter and says, it's John Miller. And he goes on to say, you know, I just started here. I'm not going to be here long, but Donald Trump likes me a lot. He's a great guy, and he would never hurt anyone, and says all this great stuff about Donald Trump. Well, it's Donald Trump. It's Donald Trump on the phone pretending to be this guy, John Miller, and they've got the audio of it.
Oh, man.
And it's clearly him, and he says, well, no, it's not. It wasn't him, but it's just the weirdest thing.
I think it's hilarious. I think it's funny. It's People magazine, and if the reporter can't decipher Donald Trump's
voice, and it's before he was a presidential candidate,
surely this will derail his campaign.
Wait, you really think that's okay?
At some point, I couldn't care less
if some entertainment reporter's calling about his extramarital affairs or whatever, and he pretends to be somebody else. And
I'll bet he thought it was a lark. Yeah. Hey, I'll be John Miller. Watch this. Yeah, John Miller here. Trump's a great guy.
Wow. Right. And well, here we go. Then
who wouldn't want a spokesman? I think that in year 8 of the Trump presidency, I'm going to be saying this has finally gone too far. This is it. This is the end of his career.
You guys don't think that's a little weird?
I think it's weird.
I think it's bold. It's weird and bold. But
it's Trumpian.
It's very Trumpian. And again, they were probably digging up dirt on him. So why not play hardball if they're playing hardball?
If he did that last week, Steve, I think you have a better case.
Okay.
Yeah.
We sound like we just popped poor Steve's balloon.
I think it's so funny.
Oh, it is. That, it's
and
awesome.
If you would hear the tape and how with the things he's saying, and he's like, you know, frankly, you know, he's being very good to Ivanka. He's really taking care of her. He's a great guy. And all this stuff, it's just ridiculous. Okay, how about this one I noticed about Trump this week? Whenever he talks with someone, he always makes it as if they wanted to talk to him. I think in ways that others don't. I mean, there was the joke on Saturday Night Live or somewhere where Donald Trump calls Barack Obama and he says, congratulations, you've reached Donald Trump. He had a phone conversation with Lindsey Graham this week, and he makes a point to say, Lindsey Graham called me this week. I was totally surprised. I didn't expect it.
Right.
And he always does that. He never says, I reached out or we talked. It's always
wanted to talk. I mean, didn't they get into a big war early on? He gave out Lindsey Graham's
cell phone number.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so now he's making friends with everybody.
What about Trump's butler?
I just saw the headline there.
I think that one matters more. I think guilt by association here matters a lot more. Trump's butler for years, who I believe now is the official historian at one of his clubs. No, really. Trump would be the guy who has a historian for one of his clubs. And that man has been saying terrible things about President Obama, including calling for his death on Facebook, and he's been doing it for a long time. This is not a brand new thing. I don't know what to do with that. It wasn't Trump that was doing that.
Peter Sagal on Twitter said, I also disavow anything my butler says.
I thought the craziest thing today, this week, was I'm sitting in my studio, I look up, we've got Fox News, CNN, MSNBC up there, and it's just always interesting to see who Fox brings on to interview in one of their news shows or news talk shows. Anyway, there's John Ratzenberg, you know, from Cheers, the mailman. He's up there.
And from the Toy Story movies?
Yeah, I guess, among other things.
Cliff
Clavin is up there. And why? Because he now has come out officially endorsing Donald Trump. And I thought that would be the sort of, you know, kind of chuckle of the week. But then Dan Quayle has come out and has endorsed Donald Trump as well. That's for real. Dan Quayle, former vice president of the United States, has endorsed Donald Trump. That's probably as high up as you can get for an endorsement for Donald Trump so far.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you certainly get it. Well, John McCain, he was never the president, but
and Mitch McConnell. But how about Mitt Romney, again, talking about the tax returns? I think the tax things are interesting. Again, saying yesterday that he thinks it's disqualifying. Not that Trump should do it, but that if he doesn't do it, it should disqualify him from being elected president.
What do you think of that, Steve?
I think that's pretty strong. I mean, I think it's just another thing that Trump will get away with. And, you know, I just love his language that he's not going to release it until the audit is done or until after the election. Well, he's not going to release it after the election. He's not going to say, oh, by the way, I won. Here are my taxes.
He has promised to release them for months.
Right.
So if he doesn't.
He won't. He said he's not going to.
I don't know why he doesn't, because I cannot. Somebody dream up something in there that would derail his campaign.
If he has given very little money to charity, if he has, taken advantage of some very questionable tax loopholes, if we find out that he has businesses or investments in shady companies,
maybe
all kinds of things to create conflicts for him.
He's overpaid his spokesman, John Miller.
I think
Kristen is right. I think that it is hypocrisy that is what could possibly derail Trump's support. That kind of thing. When he says outrageous things, that just kind of gets him more attention and more support. But if he is shown to be a hypocrite, and this is why the release of the transcript of his interview with the New York Times editorial board, I don't know if you guys followed this story, but he went and spoke to the New York Times editorial board. He asked that it be off the record. And apparently he reportedly said, or not reportedly, I guess, but just the rumor is that he said that he was just saying a lot of this stuff because he wanted to win votes.
It was about the wall,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, don't take me seriously about the wall. He has refused to lift that off-the-record agreement. And so the thinking is with that and with the tax returns, same as Hillary Clinton's speeches to Goldman Sachs, which is that the political cost of releasing them is greater than the cost of not releasing them and looking like you've got something to hide.
Well, I don't think editorial board meetings, if they are off the record, they're off the record. And that's up to the New York Times to set those ground rules and then honor it. So I don't think that's in the same category.
I agree with that.
Is Hillary's speech to Goldman Sachs the same way then, Kristen?
Well, no, it was a paid. I mean, I don't get that exercise about whether or not she could those transcripts should be released. I think we can all pretty much assume it was a welcoming speech, and she praised them, and she wasn't tough on Wall Street. But she got paid, over the course of a few years, $400,000 to make those speeches. That's different than a candidate going into an editorial board meeting where the rule is if it's off the record, it's off the record. And we do that all the time, and you do want people to speak freely, but then you have to honor it afterwards.
Oh, of course the New York Times should honor it. And the question is, can Trump unilaterally lift off the record?
Well, did they tape it? I mean, like, there might not even be an actual transcript.
I think they did tape
it.
There's something like that.
Or release the notes. I mean, I trust somebody there had a pretty good recollection of what he said.
Well, I can tell you that just about every time somebody comes to the Tribune editorial board of note, a lot of people have their little pocket recorders out, and if it's off the record, it's off the record. But I imagine that probably happened when Trump. Certainly when Trump came to our editorial board, there were 15 little recorders on the table there.
Well, I've stopped guessing why, or at least guessing accurately why, anything is ever going to derail the Trump campaign. So if any of those things were in there that you were suggesting, Kristen, I think people would just say, oh, whatever. It's like Trump has bragged. Do I want to pay taxes? No, I pay as few taxes as I can. I'm a rich guy. And everybody goes, yeah.
And when he was saying that, John, that was when he was promising to return them. I'm going to release my taxes. I pay as little taxes as I can. Those two sentences were married together when he was saying, I will release them.
That would harm Hillary Clinton. That would harm Mitt Romney. That would harm a regular politician. But you really think the people that are turning up at those rallies are going to go, wait a minute, he didn't give as much to veterans. I'm not going to vote for him now.
I mean, maybe not, but I think the Clintons have had to release their taxes. They made $100 million in the past few years. So she is having to go through scrutiny over how much money they gave away and how much they paid. And She's a multi-millionaire now, not too far off the track from Donald Trump. So I do think there's a case to be made that it would be patently unfair for him to not have to go through the same sort of scrutiny that she is.
It's not going to show his net worth, right? It could show that maybe he lost money on the year or something.
Well, it depends on if they release all the schedules, and Mitt Romney did, and that's why Mitt Romney's tax return was about a foot high. And that's kind of the precedent that has been set.
I think it's interesting the way Romney is hitting him harder than anyone else, really, about it. You know, saying this disqualifying thing, that's a strong word.
Right.
It's not the law. You don't have to. You know, all of this is tradition that goes back, incidentally, my understanding is, to the Checkers speech. Remember, Nixon was accused of improperly using some campaign funds, so he gave that speech for 29 minutes to the American people.
She has a fine cloth coat, a Republican cloth coat,
and not a mink coat. And then Nixon went on to describe every single thing about his finances, including what the cost of their homes were, how much they still owed on the mortgages for her mom. And then at the end, he said they're going to keep the little dog, too. And forward from there, we now have this tradition of releasing income taxes.
Donald Trump said this morning, he said, look, there are a lot of presidents who haven't. I mean, there's John Quincy Adams. There's Millard Fillmore didn't.
FDR.
But every nominated candidate since 1976 has done so.
So the big controversy, I thought also very interesting this week, was Paul Ryan meeting with Trump for the summit. Eric, what's your takeaway from that? Was that legit? Are they making progress? How do you read that?
Well, it seems to me that Paul Ryan does have some major policy differences with Donald Trump on taxes and trade and immigration and sort of basic conservative political philosophy, and that it's going to be tough for him to basically swallow his conservative nerd brand and cross over to support Trump. I think, though, that he realizes that he's got a lot of members of his own caucus in the House who are hot for Trump, that most of them live in districts that were won by Trump, and that he's got to keep his eyes on the future, and he also has to think about what a Hillary Clinton presidency would mean for his broader agenda. So I think that he is playing footsie right now with Trump, that we all know that he has to endorse him sooner or later, but he is playing the part of, if not actually being the reluctant endorser, but he will come there.
He only met him for 45 minutes, and he said afterwards, I'm not going to come out and endorse him now. That would seem fake. This has to be a genuine process. Why are you laughing, Steve?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of people who haven't met him for 4 minutes who have endorsed him, members of Congress. I mean, you know.
Never met him at all.
Right. Or never met him at all.
I don't envy Ryan for this task.
It's tough.
He's between a rock and a hard place. And yet he comes out and says, well, but we need to ensure that we have the same bedrock conservative principles and values. And I keep thinking that's not the problem here. I mean, maybe it is for Republicans, but their real problem is he's cuckoo bananas. Their real problem is that he tried to link Ted Cruz's dad to the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
It hasn't been unproven yet.
And that's the – and so, you know, I think –
he's a birther. What do you have to say aside from that?
There are some policy differences that matter, though, to the voters who – if Trump is going to win, he has to motivate that hard right – wing of the party, and they do follow things like Obamacare, and Paul Ryan has been working on a repeal and replace plan, failingly, but has been trying to, and so now he might have a president coming in who's going to dismantle the work that House Republicans have tried to do, or on tax reform, or on Medicaid reform. I mean, there are some very wonky things.
Entitlement reform. That's Ryan's big thing.
First person to start talking about, you know, the bankruptcy, the looming bankruptcy of Social Security and Medicare.
And hasn't Trump said, I'm not going to touch entitlements, right?
I don't know that he's really been pressed on it, to be honest.
He doesn't know what entitlements are.
Right. He has to learn first, and then he'll say something really
stupid. He said he was
going to
lower taxes for everybody. Then he said, I'm going to raise taxes for the rich. And they said, you're a hypocrite. And he said, well, by raise taxes on the rich, I mean raise them from where I previously theoretically lowered them. They would still be – so, you know, he's kind of dodging these bullets as they come at him with his own speech.
You know, the other thing, the substantive thing this week, is he's now backing away from this Muslim ban. Which was pretty much universally considered unconstitutional, if not several other on things. And now he's changing the rhetoric to maybe just sort of focus on Syria, which I'll be interested to see how that plays with the people who cheered him on and supported him in the primaries.
New mayor of London came out and said you can't take this guy seriously. That doesn't hurt him, but if you're keeping score at home. But just back to the Ryan point for 1 second, then we can move past it. But I really think if you were a fly on the wall, you'd like to hear him say, listen, we'll figure out what to do with Syria and taxes and immigration. You have to stop saying stupid stuff, because that is what's going to cost them the election. If he just came out and acted more mature, he could make a more serious run. But it's the silly stuff that he's doing that's got to be making Ryan crazy.
I'm sure. And if you listen to when Mitt Romney gave his big overture as to, you know, why we shouldn't be voting for Donald Trump, he really encapsulated all of not just the gaffes, but far beyond how Trump is just not a true conservative. And I think that that weighs heavily on people like Paul Ryan, who, you know, he was kind of considered a backbencher in Washington because he was always talking about deficit spending and the federal debt. And now he's got a nominee who has, you know, no position on that, really, no plan to fix it. So it's frustrating for
him. How much do you think the whole Supreme Court question figures into how a lot of Republicans are looking at this? Because in some ways, as Kristen's pointing out, the Trump presidency could be just about as bad for someone like Paul Ryan as 4 years of Hillary Clinton. But 4 years of Hillary Clinton, you'll see at least one, maybe two, maybe three Supreme Court justices change. And that changes the complexion of American politics for a generation.
It's funny how this is on the back burner now, isn't it?
Well, I think it's the cover for any Republican who needs an excuse to support Donald Trump, you know, the Supreme Court.
And I've got to say, if the shoe were on the other foot and Al Sharpton or something like that were the Democratic nominee, it came down to this question of the Supreme Court, I would think yes. I mean, I could actually see myself making that kind of.
Did you see what Newt Gingrich said about this week, Eric?
You mean the next vice presidential candidate?
he said he likes the circus, and he also said, if you want to win, what you do is you just put a poster of Hillary Clinton up and say, you know, this is your next Supreme Court or something like that. Just link her to the next Supreme Court, and that would have traction. I'm amazed that we don't talk about it much anymore. It doesn't seem to be such a burning topic. It was so important a month ago. Let's segue to what's going on in Springfield and in Illinois. So the governor's sort of stepping back and hoping that, help me with this, guys, the legislature comes up with a budget, and he's kind of being cagey about, you know, responsibility for it. But it includes a increase in taxes of various forms and a cut in spending. Erica, what are your thoughts about what's happening there with the budget impasse?
Well, it certainly seems like some green shoots coming through the soil in Springfield. This is something they have to do. I mean, independent of Rauner's other agenda, his turnaround agenda, they have to raise taxes and they have to cut spending in order to get the budget together. And if they're talking seriously about that and they're putting together a proposal like that, that they're going to then take to their leaders, that looks to me like a promising sign. I would defer to Kristen, though, in her State House analysis.
State House chick.
Yeah, on Twitter.
Oh, that's
that
right.
Too.
That's right. That's your
yes,
handle.
Don't take me so seriously, people. I mean, green shoots, yes, it's hard to say. Some of the Democrats who have emerged from those meetings, you know, they're all on the ballot in November. They don't want to be viewed as tax hikers. But yes, they're talking about expanding the sales tax, increasing the income tax, some of the pension reforms that the governor wants, which, by the way, are totally reasonable. You know, we still spike pensions in this state where you have people leaving office or, you know, leaving positions with $180,000 salaries and 3% compounded COLAs. And so there's a movement to make sure that local bodies, if you're going to pay your administrators at your schools these ridiculous salaries, then you are going to pick up the pension costs over and above a certain amount. I mean, that is very reasonable. But of course, it's coming from Rauner, so the Democrats will oppose it. Madigan has already basically come out and said no, even though his chief, you know, leaders are the ones in the room over these past few weeks. So it really does rest on Madigan. And I see it as Rauner has taken off the table a lot. And here he is, his chief budget negotiator, putting two tax expansions on the table. And you still have no coming from one person.
Well, yeah, and in fact, I think there seems to be some possibility of some give on workman's comp or workers' comp reform. That seems to be an area that keeps coming up when people talk about where is there room to maybe negotiate.
It's not even that. I'm sorry.
And changes in the procurement practices, and there's something, and also property tax freeze. There seems to be some form of agreement on that. It seems like there is some room to find some agreement if everybody backs down. I'm not aware of what Kristen's just talking about, the resistance to the pension spiking stuff.
Would there be resistance to an income tax increase because they want to go from 3.75 to 4.85?
They all have to hold hands and jump together if they're going to do that.
Necessary, Eric?
I think it is. I think that we need more revenue. We need to cut spending. We need to bring our revenue and our spending in line.
How resistant would you be to that, or would the people? How much hell would there be to pay if they raise income taxes?
Well, I'll answer for myself. I think if we actually see them getting serious about a leaner, meaner government and making some important changes in the way things are done, mm-hmm. then I think people would go. I think people would go along with it. I would go along with it. Whenever I write about this, I hear from people, I'm not going to send more money to Springfield if they're not being more responsible. And these aren't necessarily Republicans who want Rauner's agenda. They just want a sense that their money is being spent wisely.
Can I ask one thing about pensions? Because I don't know the answer to this, but it seems to me that you shouldn't be able to collect a pension until you're of retirement age. And that's not where we are in Illinois, right?
You mean like 65 or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I would support something like that. Like, you can earn your pension, your government pension, but you can't start collecting on it at 50 or 55.
Those are the rules.
Supreme Court upheld the rules. But
yeah, you can't raise the age.
That's my own little reform. I want to change that.
That was in the reform that the Supreme Court shut down.
What do you think of this, Steve? If it goes from 3.75 to 4.85, would you characterize that as an increase – of 1.1% or 29%?
It depends on which party you're with.
We've had this conversation before, and I think it's very telling how that's written. You go from 3.75 to 4.85. Is that an increase of 1.1% or is that an increase of 29%?
It's 29%, let's be honest. Come on.
It is 1.1% more. Of every $100, instead of taking 3.75, they're going to take $4.85.
It's not how percentages work.
Well,
I mean, even the Tribune from the neutral newsroom, when they passed the last income tax increase, continually referred to it as a 67% increase because it brought in $31 billion extra dollars out of our pocket. So I think the 67% is more telling. That is the percentage, that is the increased percentage that you're going to lose out of your annual income.
I think both numbers are valid, or both numbers are important for the understanding of it. No, it's true, though. I mean, I think you can say it's a 25% increase, but then, okay, so what is the rate?
Yeah,
and it's 4.8%.
What does that mean for me? And what about taxing services? So if you go to an accountant, or if the guy comes and trims your tree, and that's a $100 bill, should that be a $104 bill then? I wonder if that would be so difficult to pass.
Well, we're moving into more of a service economy. And more states are taxing more and more services because of the decline in manufacturing and so on. So that it makes sense with a modern economy to do that. And again, most states have realized that. I don't think you want to tax necessarily every possible service, but yeah, I mean, I think it's a good idea. And that way, you can keep your income taxes.
There are even fiscal conservatives who support an expansion of the sales tax base. Ours is among the lowest. I think we only tax 19 different services. Indiana, Republican-led. Wisconsin, Republican-led. Tax 50 to 60 extra services that we do not here.
Of course, in theory, you can avoid them too, right? Don't engage the service.
Well, that's the thing. You want to make sure that they're not too regressive. You want to make sure that the services are things like, you know, boat waxing and stuff and not...
Or just waxing. All types of waxing. Brazilians,
Eric
whatever.
Eric shared with us a map that charts the popularity of governors all across this great land of ours. You can imagine where Governor Rauner finished. Did you see the final number for him? Did you see what his approval rating is, Eric?
I don't have it in front of me. It was like 32 or 34, something
34%.
Like that. 34%. Yeah. Well, when I took a look at that chart, they did all 50 states. And of the top 10 least popular governors— Eight are Republicans, and the Republicans only have 62% of the state houses. I will say this, though, of the top 10 most popular governors, 8 are also Republican.
Fair
enough.
So
Republicans are a little polarizing, I guess. But again, it was interesting to look at that list of unpopular governors. I think who's the first? Is it Is it Rick Snyder or Brownback? Who's the least?
Sam Brownback, who's having budget problems of his own in Kansas, is at 26%. 26%. Rick Snyder from Flint fell the furthest from Flint. Yeah, he might as well be the governor.
Right,
of Flint.
That's the reason.
No, if he was from Flint, we wouldn't have this problem.
It'd be no kidding. It'd be 32%. So Brownback 26, Snyder 32, Governor Rauner at 34. Dan Malloy, Connecticut governor, at 29%.
A Democrat.
And Christie, obviously a Republican, at 36. So way, way down there. If you want to just stay in the neighborhood, Mike Pence in Indiana, 48. Scott Walker, Wisconsin, 43. My governor, Dayton, is at 61% in Minnesota. The more popular governors are in Wyoming, Massachusetts, and Maryland.
Someone up to 70% popular. That must be a good governor.
That's a governor of Wyoming. I think that's where everybody is pretty like-minded and they don't have many problems.
So that's where 7 out of 10 people support him, and it's literally 7 out of 10 people.
Two last quick things. So Barack Obama is going to go to Hiroshima. I think this is what Steve Bertrand would describe as the media class generating a controversy where there is not one. Of course he should go to Hiroshima. And except for, I think, a small percentage of the older population, Steve, everybody sees the wisdom in that, don't they?
I haven't followed it too closely. I wasn't aware that people are saying he shouldn't. Is this more apologizing for America complaining?
They're putting forward that they're not going to apologize. But some people think his presence there would diminish the lives lost and the da-da-da-da-da-da.
Not until they apologize for Pearl Harbor. That's what I know. There are going to be no mutual apologies. I sort of wonder about going there and not saying something about it, or not. I mean, how do you address it? I'll be interested
very
to hear
carefully,
the speeches.
Yeah,
and it does it risk just pulling a scab off an old wound? I don't have a real opinion about the history about whether that was the right thing to do. Certainly, people who are experts differ on.
Has there been a Japanese leader at Pearl Harbor?
I
bet there has.
I don't know. Although when I toured there last, about 15 years ago, there was a bunch of Japanese with me. And so we take the little boat out to the Arizona Memorial, and it's a gravesite underwater. And so everybody's they remind you to be quiet and respectful. And we are. And you can't help but feel the gravity and the sadness of it all. And then you look, and the guy sitting next to you is from Japan.
Right.
And it's just a very odd kind of circumstance. You know, I wonder what they're thinking and feeling compared to what I am. And I suppose Barack Obama will have some of those emotions when he goes to Hiroshima as well. Let's wrap it up, kids, with our favorite part of the podcast. It will be the recommendations from everybody. I want to go first.
I did get a complaint that we didn't do it last week. By the way.
But from whom?
Linda Paul, one of our regular listeners.
Thank you, Linda. Well, here we go. I'll go first. I'm recommending Christy Gutowski's piece.
Oh, yeah.
I read that online today, Eric, and it'll be in the Sunday paper a couple days from when we're recording this. She went at length with Jason Van Dyke's wife talking about the police officer who shot Laquan McDonald. And I thought you learned a lot about that. I gained a different sort of emotional perspective for that family. And here's what I got mad at. I didn't get, you know, Van Dyke pulled the trigger, but he should not have been a police officer in those circumstances. I got mad at the union, and I got mad at the Chicago Police Department. You must read Christy Gutowski's piece.
I totally agree. It's a wonderful piece because it really gets into who he is and who he was growing up, but it also talks about his checkered record as a police officer,
right,
and the problems that he had. It wasn't like, when I first started reading, I thought, oh no, this isn't going to be like a warm fuzzy about this guy, and it wasn't. It was really well done.
But I think I understood why he might have pulled the trigger where it didn't seem like he needed to at all, and that's because he wasn't capable of having that job in that neighborhood. They knew that they shouldn't have put him out there. But he's a cop. He's a troubled guy, and he popped. I don't think he set out to murder that day, but he was. If you ever said pick somebody who shouldn't be in that spot because they might pull the trigger, you would have pointed to him. They had records that said he would do that.
Yeah.
Very interesting piece. All right, Eric, you're still talking. Keep going.
Man, mine is so much lamer than that. It's a Twitter hashtag. And if you sometimes they do these jokes, and this one is called hashtag remove a letter, spoil a book.
I saw this.
And the idea is you take one letter out of a book title and it ruins it. One would be like Laughter House 5 or Ho Moved My Cheese. Sisterhood of the Traveling Ants. I'll give you one more. Clifford the Bi Red Dog. Check that hashtag.
Wait a minute. I've got to do the Clifford Dog one. So what's the letter I'm missing? The big.
The Bi Red Dog.
So. All right, Steve, match that.
I'm not going to try. But I started last night Nathaniel Philbrick's new book. You ever read Nathaniel? He wrote Heart of the Sea. Great book on the Pilgrims and Custer. And his new one is called Valiant Ambition, George Washington, Benedict Arnold, and the American Revolution. And you know, you get that ever giddy feeling when you start a book and you know it's going to be good. And I always feel that way with Nat Philbrick. So that's my recommendation.
That's how I always feel when I pick up another book from, I'm going to forget the name now, Devil in the White City.
Eric Larson.
Every time Larson writes a book, I go, I'm going to go somewhere I can't imagine having gone, and this is going to be good. Okay, Krista McQuarrie, what do you like?
Well, I've had the opposite feeling with my book club book this month of opening it, and I sort of led the chooser to choose it, so I bear some responsibility. But this
man, that's the worst.
Secret Life of C.C. Wilkes, and it's just like cotton candy, romance, dumb murder mystery, just really bad, bad, bad. But now I have to read it, and I have to go, and I have to own it.
So now you're recommending we read it too.
No way.
Well, I mean, if you really want just a summer beach, I can't even recommend.
Well, a recommendation can be, hey everybody, I'm recommending you don't
avoid
read this.
Okay,
book.
Don't read it.
We should do that. We should do like every first Friday or something. We should do like things to avoid. Watch this.
Thing, since we talked about Cliff from Cheers in the beginning, I just tweeted out under State House Check, I do recommend this. My favorite normisms from Cheers, such as, real quickly, the coach. Can I draw you a beer, Norm? No, I know what they look like. Just pour me one.
Well, speaking of that, we were supposed to do our beverage recommendations this week. So let's double down next week. I want a signature cocktail from each of you. Are we all drinkers?
Kristen brought the bag of booze in.
I brought the ingredients for a Frescarita because Steve, you know, kind of poo-pooed my summer drink from a couple of weeks ago. But we're all working, so we're being responsible and not digging in.
Okay, well then next week, recommended cocktails or libations for a summer day in Chicago. Fair enough?
Sounds good.
That's the Mincing Rascals. This is John Williams. Thank you, Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio, and Eric Zorn and Kristen McQuarrie from the Chicago Tribune. We'll drop another pod and have those recommendations next week.
John, you want to also do credits for Bob and Decker?
I was two words away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Next or this week? Did they earn it this week?
I thought. Well, last week we didn't do it.
Listen to this.
Oh, no. I always put a recorded one at the end.
No, I know, but you shouldn't have. John should do that. So
really, it bothers you that Kristen does the sort of tie
it
everything up in a bowl.
It doesn't
at the
bother
end.
Me. I feel like they're part of the team. So, anyways. I'm sorry.
But
I ruined this. Now I've just all I've done with this is make them have to go and edit all this crap.
We're not editing this out. So to be clear, you want me to say thank you, Bob Ferguson, our engineer, and Kristen Decker, our producer. But Kristen comes on at the end and does this subscribe to the Mincing Rascals language and all that stuff I fumble over. So I thought, well, maybe she could. But you think it would be more from the heart if I did,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, more from the heart if you're like, by the way, thanks to me for producing the podcast.
Yeah, that's true. I'm terrible about this, and I feel really bad. So thank you for that, Eric.
I care about everyone. That's my brand.
I do, too. Thank you so much, Bob Ferguson.
This is the longest exit I've ever heard. Bye-bye.
And Kristen. Bye, Kristen. I'll finish in a minute here. And thank you, Kristen Decker, for producing The Mincing Rascals.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNplus.com. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 1:30 to 2 p.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.
You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you! Little rascal, you!